Welcome to the Grateful American Radio Show, hosted by author and publisher David Bruce Smith. What did George Washington do that you might not know about? What did Abe Lincoln know that could change the way you think about the Civil War? You'll learn about all that and more on this special show designed to restore excitement in American history. Let's get started. Hello and welcome to the Grateful American series. Here we are today at Montpelier, James and Dolly Madison's home in Orange, Virginia, and we are at the Center for the Constitution with the team that heads up this organization. This includes Dr. Lynn Uzel, the scholar in residence, Dr. Sean O'Brien, the Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer, and Jennifer Howell, the Director of Digital Publishing at Montpelier. Thank you for having us.
Welcome to Montpelier.
So let's tell the audience a little bit about the center. This is actually the Robert H. Smith Center for the Constitution at James Madison's Montpelier, which offers world-class on-site and web-enabled education programming. The center's goal is to inspire participation in civic dialogue, improve the public's understanding of the founding principles of the United States, and enable citizens to deepen their understanding of and participation in our democracy. All amazing, noble efforts. So let's start off with a quote by James Madison, who famously said in 1822, "Knowledge will forever govern ignorance, and a people who mean to be their own governors must arm themselves with the power which knowledge gives." So tell us, Sean, do you want to start off? The Center for the Constitution was established in 2002 with the goal of becoming the nation's leading resource in high quality in constitutional education. So how are you accomplishing that mission?
Well, James Madison really said it best when he talked about the importance of education. And we take that to heart in what we do here at the Robert H. Smith Center for the Constitution. And for the long time, we have worked with teachers and other groups to really get in depth into what the founders were reading, what the founders were writing, and to talk about the founding principles of the United States and really the origin of modern democracy and the work that James Madison and the fellow founders were doing at that time. The thing that I think is really interesting and important about the Smith Center is that we're a nonpartisan organization dedicated to teaching teachers, law enforcement officials, elected officials, and others about these founding principles so that they can take this knowledge on to the people that they influence. So we refer to these people as leverage points in society. So teachers teach lots of students, police officers interact with whole communities, elected officials, of course, make policy and pass legislation. And so we really feel like bringing people to Montpelier as the pinnacle experience in learning about our story, the American story, learning about the American identity, is the way to really inspire them to take their knowledge about the Constitution to the next level.
So has the Constitutional Center made a difference? And how do you measure it, if it has?
Well, of course, yes, it's made a great difference. We've worked with thousands of teachers from all across the country and from people from many countries to talk about these founding principles. We routinely ask teachers, okay, you've been to Montpelier, it's been a year since you were here. Has that experience had any influence on your teaching? How is it helping your students? And they report to us that what they've learned at Montpelier has been a significant contributor to the way that they talk about the American story and the origins of the United States. And really what we want to do in that case is take that knowledge to the next generation, because they're the ones who are then going to grow up and be the leaders when I'm an old man and I want to have educated and thoughtful leaders running the country. And so having the students get a passion for the Constitution and the founding of America when they're in school so that they can continue that passion throughout their lives.
So what are some of the things that you do when you're teaching? What kinds of technologies do you use, and how do you keep the interest of whoever your audience is?
Well, I think we try to approach the subject in much the same way that James Madison himself would approach it, which is to say, that we take whatever subject we're looking at, whatever constitutional aspect they're studying, federalism or the legislative power or the executive power, and we look at the background of that that aspect. And so we look at the way it had been understood prior to the Constitution, whether in the state constitutions or in the European constitutions or in the six ancient and modern confederacies that Madison had looked at. And then with that background, we look at the way it was actually developed within the United States Constitution. And then once we have that grounding, we have the way of analyzing and appraising the way that these powers have been developed in American history. And then begins the real lively discussion as to whether or not it has been developed in a way that the framers would approve of, or if we have deviated in any way, or whether changes have occurred which have been an improvement on what the framers did.
So can you talk about some of the major projects you've done here?
Well, we have a lot of seminars here, and these seminars are often geared to a particular demographic. For instance, school teachers, middle school, even elementary school and high school, and also law enforcement agencies. We have had seminars for state judges, but we also try to keep a few slots open even for the general public. And all of these people have diverse backgrounds and a diverse level of understanding of the material before they get here. But one thing that they have in common is a desire and an interest to learn more. And so we provide them with a setting in which they can immerse themselves in this subject and give them all a grounding from which to discuss it from morning till evening, because they're here for a few days.
You know, I want to say one of the great things about coming to Montpelier to study is that you're doing it at the place where James Madison studied it. So he was preparing for the Constitutional Convention while here at Montpelier. So if you come here as part of a seminar, you get to stay on the Montpelier property, participate in seminars down here in Lewis Hall, and then at the end of the day, when the tourists have gone home, the property belongs to the people in the seminar. And the opportunity to walk around the grounds in the quiet contemplation of the Constitution, or not so quiet, as the case may be, depending on the debates that people get involved in, and to sit up on the steps of the Montpelier Mansion and watch the sunset as James and Dolly Madison might have done, and talk about the important issues of the day as they relate to the Constitution, is incredibly powerful. The power of place that you get from participating in a seminar at Montpelier, you're not staying in an anonymous hotel out in the community, you're staying at Montpelier. And that really takes the experience to a whole new level.
The conversations don't end when the final class ends. When they go back up to their houses, they all sit on the porches or the patios and they keep talking about these important issues that have been raised throughout the course of the day. And that really is part of our focus, is getting our participants talking about these issues. Whether or not they find an answer right away isn't the point. It's the careful deliberation, the reasoned debate that they have with each other after reading these documents and reading about James Madison's contributions that really matter.
So can you each give us an example of some of the discussions that they've had that have really resonated with you personally?
Well, I mean, to give an example, one of the discussions we've had is the question of federalism. And as I said, we like to start the debate with what federalism meant to the framers themselves, which is to say what federalism meant when they met, when they considered the Articles of Confederation and the way that confederacies had existed before. But what we try to impress upon them is that even though we're using the same language that they did, we often mean different things by the words. And federalism, the meaning of it, changed over the course of the debates of the Constitutional Convention. And so federalism meant something else in this new constitution that they developed. And the meaning of federalism has continued to evolve since that time. And therefore, this gives us a framework from which to determine whether or not federalism has developed in a way that people approve of or not. And many people insist that the rights that were designated to retain in the states has been too far evolved. And other people think that the powers that were concentrated within the central government were absolutely necessary, and in some cases, a part of what James Madison's plan was from the beginning. And therefore, this gives them a kind of debate from which to determine what future policies ought to be.
One thing that I find most fascinating is working with law enforcement officials, because in general, they haven't spent a lot of time in a classroom setting doing academic study. You know, they learn how to fire a weapon, they learn how to drive a car, they learn how to put handcuffs on. So they learn the how of their job, but they don't often have the opportunity to learn the why behind the how. And so talking with police officers about the First Amendment is amazing, right? They learn about the amendments related to search and seizure and all of those things quite extensively because that's relevant to arresting somebody. But in these days where anybody has a camera on them and maybe even have a high definition camera in their pocket and they can film the arrest or they can film being, you know, given a ticket or they can walk out of a bar and see police arresting somebody. You know, there was a case recently where police officers were filmed arresting somebody and the person was filming it was being harassed by the police and the guy said, I'm just exercising my First Amendment rights. And the police officer said, you don't have any rights. Well, that's not true, of course. That's a great example of a teachable moment for all law enforcement officials, is to take that into the classroom and say, what does the First Amendment mean today? At a time when the First Amendment was written, the idea of free speech was very different than it is today with Reddit and Tumblr and Twitter and a million other different ways to get your message out and the ability for everything to be recorded and put out there for people to see. And so talking about the amendments that they don't necessarily always talk about in their jobs is really amazing.
One audience that we work with quite a bit are international visitors, and these are really wonderful opportunities to have a global impact in what we're doing. We had a couple of years ago a group of Zimbabwean lawyers who stayed with us for a week, and they were interested in drafting a new constitution for their country. They came here to learn about Madison's role in creating the U.S. Constitution, to learn about how he navigated challenges with very disparate viewpoints within within the colonies. And they took what they learned here, they went back to Zimbabwe and drafted a model constitution for their country. And they're still working on that constitution, but they're using the Madison example as a model moving forward, and that's really exciting for us.
One of the things I think is particularly exciting about the Zimbabwe project and some other international groups that we brought in is if we, through the work we do here with Lynn and other scholars that we work with, can help one country make even just one line of their constitution more rights-based or have a better understanding of rule of law, we can affect millions of people's lives for generations. And that is the kind of impact that the Robert H. Smith Center is trying to have.
So Lynn, tell us a little bit more about what it means to be a scholar in residence.
Well, what it means is that I get to put a lot of the training that took me years to acquire to some actual practical use and to be able to share it with many others. So one of the things that we do here is to conduct on-site seminars, and for those I'm able to do some teaching, which is one of my favorite things to do. And also, we have been trying to use some of the emerging technologies and new forms of teaching and apply them to the enduring principles of the Constitution. So we have been developing some online courses as well as our on-site ones, and these are meant to supplement one another. And therefore, I have the opportunity to do research in order to develop these courses. And this involves both writing for some of the content and also some video and also some other ways of creating innovative activities for the participants who wish to take these online courses.
So have you become a model for other historic sites?
Well, I don't know if all historic sites seek to have the kind of educational influence that we seek to have, but we decided that we wanted to have two different aspects to Montpelier's experience. One of them is the historical site in which James and Dolly Madison actually lived, but the other aspect is to have an institution which is dedicated to educating people in the principles that James Madison learned himself and developed in the founding of the American Constitution. And therefore, we wanted to have an institute that was dedicated just to that purpose.
What's it like for you to actually walk around these grounds? Does it feel like hallowed ground?
Well, it really does. And I think that many people, it's not just myself, but many people experience that. And one of the most gratifying experiences for me after teaching a group of people about James Madison's role in the development of the Constitution is that people at the end of the experience will say, I had no idea how important he was to our country, because he is one of the forgotten founders and he is so important to the principles, the constitutional structure that we have.
I'd return to that question of walking around on the grounds. We spent a lot of time and a lot of money restoring the house to the house that James and Dolly Madison knew physically in terms of its architecture. And now we've spent the last 5 years and will continue in perpetuity probably working on the interior and the landscape so that when you're here, it's not a question of imagining James Madison. Of course you can imagine him because it'll be an 18th and 19th century landscape where you can sort of picture James and Dolly Madison in situ talking about these things. And that's why having the mansion and the Center for the Constitution next to each other is so important, because the mansion without the Center for the Constitution is a wonderful historic site that everyone should come see because of the significance of James Madison, but the power that the Center for the Constitution brings to that mix makes the mansion so much more resonant and so much more important as a place for people to support and to want to see be successful, because we're trying to take this to a whole nother level. You know, we work with tourists on a daily basis and they're wonderful and we're so happy that they come, and we really try and give them a very deep experience and teach them about philosophy and political science. Mm-hmm. But we also want to take it to the next level with the online courses as well as with the courses on site.
And Jen, talk a little bit about how digital technology has really changed your reach and what you do here.
We started with our first online course in 2011. What we very quickly realized is with the wonderful facilities we have here, we can only reach a finite number of people. We have a limited number of beds and a limited number of days in the year. And to be perfectly honest, not everyone is going to come to Orange, Virginia. And we don't want to reach only the people who are going to be able to get here on site. And so we started our first online course, Constitutional Foundations, in 2011. And that was our attempt to bring the power of place to people who wouldn't normally be able to get here. It can also be a really nice complement to the on-site experience. So while we're able to multiply our numbers, we're also able to reach the participants who will be coming here for a program. They can get a base level of knowledge before they get here and really maximize the time that they have with the scholar and here on the property. So now we have two online courses that are up live. They're free, open to anyone who would like to take them. And we have 12 more currently in production that we'll be launching over the next 3 years.
And how many participants in those courses?
So far in our courses, we've had, in each of our online initiatives, we've had about 11,000 come through our online programming.
It's really impressive. Mm-hmm. Lynn, tell us a little bit about the Context program. That's a project you've been involved in closely.
Yes, the Context was launched with the debates of the Constitutional Convention. Now, this was something else that Madison contributed to the Constitutional Convention. In addition to his own wisdom, he volunteered himself as the unofficial scribe, and he took down all of the notes of the debates that framed the Constitution. And this is a body of work which is largely forgotten and is not given the significance that it really deserves. Madison preserved these notes so that people could understand, in his words, the objects, the opinions, and the reasonings from which our own structure of government was made. So we have decided to make these notes more widely available by, first of all, publishing them online, and then second, giving the users opportunity to comment on these notes. And therefore, alongside the notes themselves, are panes in which people can input their own commentary of the notes, whether this commentary is historical or philosophical or relating to current events. And therefore, it creates this ongoing conversation about our Constitution. So it started with the notes of the convention, and we have since been uploading other documents as well.
We partnered with the Brookings Institution on this project, and it began as we were sitting around a table lamenting that Madison's notes of debates were out of print, as only Constitution nerds can lament that these things are out of print. And our friends at Brookings describe them as the greatest document never read. They're long, they're dense, they're written in a sort of shorthand, and they're just such a treasure trove of what happened at the convention, and they hold so much information that will help us understand why it is we live in the world we live in now and how we might be able to make better decisions moving forward. And so we wanted to put this document online, make it a sort of constitutional Talmud, where we could crowdsource all of the annotations. And so we're actively working to explain those notes, and we quickly realized that we developed a tool that would be instrumental in the interpretation or the examination of other historical documents as well. So that's really our focus right now, is what other documents are really going to help us move the needle in terms of understanding these primary source documents.
And I think what you just said is fundamental to Madison's contribution, which is understanding the past so that we can move forward properly, which is why David wanted to found the Grateful American series, to help other people understand where we came from so that we can move forward. He says that all the time. So as we finish up, can you each tell us what your favorite fun fact is about James Madison and Dolly Madison here at Montpelier?
Well, I suppose one thing that I would want to emphasize is that although James Madison is often viewed as being very shy and reserved, he knew how to act when it was necessary. There's so much about the way that the Constitutional Convention progressed, which really had as its basis the machinations of James Madison, who was not just an intellectual scholar, but he was also a very savvy politician. And I suppose one amusing story to emphasize how proactive James Madison could be was in his courtship of Dolly, which he first of all not only maneuvered an introduction with her through Aaron Burr, but then once he met her, he had proposed to her within a couple of months, and they were married within only a few months of meeting.
Through Aaron Burr, and he was good friends with Alexander Hamilton, and then that was the famous duel, right?
Well, they were less than friends, which is what resulted in the in the famous duel.
Fascinating. Well, we'll have to
But at the time of the introduction, Aaron Burr was a highly respected, very highly thought of person in American society.
Right.
He was not the rogue that we all think of him as.
Right.
He had not yet fallen from favor.
Right. He was a well-respected senator at this time. He was an old college chum of James Madison, and he was a boarder at the boarding house that Dolly Madison's mother had run, and that was the connection.
Jewish geography from the 1700s.
Well, in terms of James and Dolly Madison, favorite facts, I think one of the things that's interesting is James Madison is often thought of as sort of being quiet and reserved. And we hear these stories about when the weather was bad that James and Dolly would chase each other around on the front porch for exercise. And I just love the image. It's not too hard to imagine her, based on our popular conception of the history of Dolly Madison. But the idea that James Madison would be chasing her around and the two of them would be giggling and tickling each other is really appealing to me in terms of trying to humanize him and make him somebody that people can identify with. The other thing that I find fascinating about the Madisons is John Payne Todd, so Dolly Madison's son, James Madison's stepson. He was a challenging child. was a bit of a drinker and a gambler and made a lot of bad business investments. And I think he liked to shop quite a bit and would send things home, cash on delivery. And, but they loved him unequivocally. And I think it's also a nice thing because it's pretty easy to forget that they had families and their families had foibles and they had problems. And it's easy to demonize one person, but it's important to remember that he was their son and they just loved him to the end. And I think that's a wonderful thing too.
I think my favorite James Madison stories surround him holding dinner conversations with his guests. You know, guests would come to Montpelier. They would sometimes stay a week, sometimes they would stay months, and they would all dine in the Madison dining room. And instead of Madison seating himself at the head of the table, which was customary, Madison would seat himself in the middle of the table. And that way he could hear all of the conversations taking place and really have a part in everyone's discussion at the table. Dolly would sit at the head of the table, which I think is another statement altogether. But I like the image of Madison sitting in the middle because it really makes me think about the efforts that he made at the Constitutional Convention and in lots of other situations, the War of 1812 being one of them, where he was a master of compromise. Where he could fall in the middle of that discussion and really help bring people together when otherwise they may not agree.
That's beautiful. So is there anything you'd like to say before we finish?
Well, I think I'd like to emphasize something that you said about carrying on the spirit of James Madison. And we here at the Robert H. Smith Center for the Constitution happen to think that James Madison is one of the wisest of the American founders. But our object is not to teach his opinions in such a way that people merely adopt what he seemed to believe about politics, but rather we hope to inspire the way that he approached politics, which is to say that he believed that understanding the decisions and the choices that people made in history informs wise choices for the future. And therefore, we like to carry on that same sort of spirit in the way that we study our own history.
Beautifully said.
I like that.
That's great.
So for more information, our viewers can go to www.montpelier.org/center and find out everything that they need to know to come here and study.
Absolutely.
And also come for a visit. Well, thank you all for your time. We really appreciate it.
It was our pleasure. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for coming.
You're watching the Grateful American series. We look forward to talking to you again soon. You have been listening to the Grateful American radio show, hosted by author and publisher David Bruce Smith. Here's to restoring enthusiasm in history for kids and adults, too.